become tough and rough. Someone will say it's in the nature of politics. But also it might be in the nature of our own selves to be able to ask ourselves all those hard questions before taking the responsibility. Well, learning the hard way, we have a program today that unfortunately is minus national treasury. The excuse or the reasons that the minister Dan has given to us in finance as an appropriate body. They cannot be involved in the review process. That's in a nutshell what that letter says. Which is fine and acceptable. We shall, of course, keep engaged with them from time to time on some specific method of review, quarterly or otherwise. We, as a result, have the agent office that shall come through and then go for lunch. And after that, we shall be having the department to submit its annual report. The entities shall come through tomorrow. And on Thursday, we shall be having the Environment Department together with the Department of Water Sanitation coming before us to talk to us about practical programs that the two departments have been involved in mitigation and adaptation against drought specifically. We've made it very clear that we do not want fairy stories, that historically, philosophically, theoretically, we all do know those. Why we have climate change, why, or the causes of climate change. We all shall have read the Paris Agreement of COP21. We want to know what are the practical programs that the Department of Water and Sanitation and Environment have been involved in the year under review, so that we are able to measure as to whether indeed we are making progress in limiting gas emissions that are causing all the problems that we have in our ecosystems. So that we are very clear on that one, that we are not interested so much about all those historical issues. Just practical programs that departments together with the Environment Department have been involved in. That's what we shall be expecting on Thursday. And the sentence shall start with, these are the practical programs that we have been involved in mitigating against drought in these rural areas, namely in these specific districts and provinces. I think that is clear enough. We have repeatedly mentioned that point four. The last point of Thursday shall be a report by Public Service Commission, which we do have. Having written to the Public Service Commission, about what is going on or what has gone on in the department, specifically with our appointment. This is in keeping with what we have been asking ourselves as well about the management of the department. This is what we've been asking ourselves. Whether we do have managers who are supposed to plan so that we are able to get to know going forward as to how we deal with these problems that we have within the department. Okay, if there is nothing else from members, I think it's a number of issues that started to arise out of the report themselves, especially for the department to present us. I think that there'll be no hand up. We are all fine with the program for this week. We certainly do have apologies from Deputy Minister. One of the members, Mr. Swami, he is on medical or other sick leave. Mrs. Kaula, another committee meeting. Nkosi Telekulu has a party meeting. Madia is looking at Mr. Carlos' apology as well. Those are the only apologies that we have. Try for all means to formalize our own work. As a result, there be such a paper trail. We shall assist us going forward. Okay, thank you, members, and thank you, Mr. Mbuni, for that attempt. Much appreciated. Members, there be no further ado, we shall demonstrate and hand over to the AG's office. The department officials are here. As and when there is any clarity sought, they come in handy. Similarly, as they present at 2 o'clock, they expect you to be around so that you equally come in handy.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and anima aquí en el título que le di por modificación de edad, en el extremo sobre el taller, oso por modificación de edad. Honorable Chair, if you allow me, I will go straight into it, and I will start with our reputation promise, that first slide there. That is where we again allude to the fact that we exist to strengthen our democracy through enabling accountability and oversight through the audit that we conduct as Auditor General. And we get involved, Honorable Chair, in the BRRR process by sharing the insights on the audit outcomes, and hopefully this would assist the committee in formulating their recommendations during the budget review process. And then, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, when we go into the audit, you will see that consistent with all the other years, again, we still audit three areas, which is the annual financial statements, the predetermined objectives, as well as compliance with laws and regulations. And this stems from the Public Audit Act that says that our regularity audit will focus on these three areas. And these are the three areas that will be reflecting on through this presentation today. Honorable Chair, just before we go into the details, again, our audit opinions remain the same that we know, the type of audit opinions that we have. We still have an unqualified opinion with no findings, which is reflected with the green color at the far left, and we always indicate again through the athletes that one is one athlete who manages to clear all the hurdles with no challenge. And then we have next to him a financially unqualified opinion with findings, and that one again still clears the hurdle, although with a couple of knocks on the knee, but the handles still remain intact. And if you get next to him, the qualified opinion, which would portray with the one who clears it, but with the handle down. Some particular areas in the financial statements or criticism that reflect on that is an area of qualification or that contains material statements. But financial statements overall, with the exception of that one particular or that those few particular things, still remains a credible information to use. And then we have the ones that we don't necessarily want ourselves to be in, which is adverse opinions. There you will see it's portrayed by an athlete who, even in the process, hurt himself because he really could not clear the hurdle. So that one depicts within the financial statements or within the predetermined objectives areas that where there are disagreements, where the person did not really do what was supposed to happen. And then the other one, the last one, which is a disclaimer, is where we are not able to actually provide an opinion on the set of information that is before us, either the financial statements or the, you know, the predetermined objectives. So I think that still remains as is Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And then Honorable Chair, again, we still use a lot of color in our presentation, but we try to, as far as possible, that it remains consistent so that the message that comes out of it is easy to understand. We depict green with unqualified, with no findings, and yellow qualified findings. You will see that it is consistent with the hurdles that we've just spoken about in the previous slide. And then just beneath there, you will see we have those few arrows that we have there. We have a green one that faces up, which
depicts an improvement, and then we have a yellow one that remains unchanged or with a slight improvement or regression. But if it's within like 5% or less of the variance, we always refer to it as unchanged, and it picks up that yellow color. And then regression will be indicated by a red arrow facing downwards. Yeah. Okay. Now, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, when we go into the outcomes of the 17-18, you'd recall that last year we had a discussion around the accountability wheel. Now, again, we would like to reflect on it, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and to again say the center or the theme of our message is still to say we need people who are accountable. We need institutions where accountability is key. And we have unpacked this by always saying for accountability to happen, there needs to be plans that we have made that are defined, that are solid, that are understandable. And we then have to put in place systems and processes through the do section, which actually assist us in achieving those plans that we have, either the targets or a particular project that we have planned to achieve. And then another layer that we need is to ensure that we monitor our progress throughout the period that we have set for the achievement of that particular plan. Ideally, in this case, we look at it at an annual basis. So we said there needs to be continuous and constant monitoring of our progress against that, those planned activities. Then we always say, out of the continuous constant monitoring, we identify gaps, we identify transgressions, wherever these transgressions and gaps appear, we need to put in place consequence management. So the process, the consequences that we put in place is just to deter the behavior that we do not necessarily want depicted in the process that we have put in place. And we always say once we have done this, we are more likely to have better audit outcomes. And after we have better audit outcomes, we are more likely than not to also have a better impact on service delivery. And again, this still remains the central theme of our message, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, around accountability. And this year what we have done is we have said, let's go into detail a bit around the plan B check. And you will see that here we even trying to reflect on how our portfolio has fared in terms of the plan do and check effect. And you will see that around the plan area, we say there's still a couple of things that we really need to solidify. And when we really see that some of the activities that happen within the planning area actually showed some signs of regression that would require a bit of tightening up. When we look at the two elements, we realized that we can say there was some slight regressions and others remained a bit unchanged. And as well as in the doing part, there are areas that indicate improvements within the assurance providers, but there are others that also still require some effort in order to get traction, as well as within the acting part. But you will see that we will talk specifically to the issues one now when we get into the real outcomes of the portfolio. This slide, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is a slide where we try to reflect on the positives that we have actually identified through our audit and within the portfolio. And you will see that we want to highlight areas where there are clean audit opinions with the far corner at the left on top there. We want to reflect areas within the financial statements in the middle sector here, and quality of performance report and non-compliance. So you will see, for example, you look at clean audit report, at clean audit, we would say we are sitting at about 33%. So we are just reflecting on the positives that, that came out of the portfolio. And you would see that equally, the quality of the financial statements that were provided, we still have about 33%. And you will clearly understand this with the following slide that we're going to reflect, which is the overall audit outcomes that we always reflect. So if you, look at this one, just tying the last slide that I have depicted, the 33% positive things that come out of the out of the portfolio, you will see that we have WRC there that's standing in the green color, which has achieved again this year a clean audit, and it's the one that reflects that positivity that we saw in the previous slide. I think the other ones as well, although they still remain within these areas, you will see that some of them they have actually made traction. The case in point being with the WTE there, where last year when we were discussing here, we were discussing about four qualification paragraphs, but this year we are discussing about two of them. But if you look at this picture in totality, you'd see that the main drivers within the portfolio, which is the department and the entity, still remain at qualification compared to the same situation as in last year. And we'll also then go further on into the specifics of what are the areas that resulted in the qualifications. But I think if you look at WTE, for example, the qualification that remains is on property, plant and equipment, and again the completeness of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, while within the department it's still the completeness of fruitless and wasteful, completeness of irregular, and also on commitment. So you realize that in both, actually there's one specific paragraph that would have dropped, even though the overall result still remains within qualification. Then this slide here, Honorable Member, is just to depict the overall improvement, because they still remain within the categories in which they were, which is WRC was still at a clean opinion, and both the department and WTE are still in the qualification status. So we then depict it as not having improvement. Usually what the improvement here that we note is if one of the entities between the department and WTE had moved out of the qualification area, then you would see one element that sits within the improvement column. And then the next slide, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, is where we depict the outcomes within compliance as well as predetermined objectives. Again, we still try to reflect it over 5 years. If you look at the picture, let's focus mainly on the compliance element, which is the first block. You would see that we are moving from predominantly red, and then there's an element of green that comes through the WRC. And that's the improvement that we noted over the past 2 years, where WRC now currently sits at an at a clean opinion. But the other main drivers, again, WTE as well as the department, still have four challenges around compliance, and we will reflect just a bit now on the areas in which there were challenges that we noted. And when you look at the predetermined objectives, which is the the next block on towards the right, if you look at that picture, you would see that it started all being sitting at rating 13-14, and WRC became managed to clean the predetermined objectives, and then in the following year WRC and WTE managed to clean it, and in 16-17 they all cleaned. And then we have this other anomaly where we go back on the department as well as WTE. And you'll see that that message is consistent between the annual performance plans as well as the annual performance report. And we will talk to the specifics again later on what drives that. Maybe let's look now at what drives the compliance on key legislation, and here you will see that in our audit report we always reflect on compliance in three areas: compliance on financial statements, we look at expenditure management, we look at revenue management, procurement and consequence management. And here you will see that with the annual financial statements, there were two particular things that we noted there, which was that the financial statements for 17-18 were not submitted on legislated time. We had some challenges around that area, and we noted it as a non-compliance because the specific timeline that is required for submission of financial statements, as well as that the financial statements that were provided for audit had material adjustments that needed to happen. So with material adjustments, we always look at it in two folds. We look at the material adjustments which were there, which management was able to clear during the audit, and those which they were not able to clear. So in this case, both the department and the entity would have both the ones where they were able to clear and the ones that they were not able to clear, which resulted in the qualified opinions. And again, we had some non-compliances around expenditure management. Here you will see that we always reflect on whether management was able to prevent fruitless and wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, and unauthorized expenditure. And we had some of these items within the current year outcomes. So as a result, that was not done. We looked at payments, for example, that were not made within 30 days, and that becomes a non-compliance. We looked at some of the payments that were made without appropriate delegations, and so those are some of the examples that you will find sitting within the non-compliance under expenditure management. And when you look at revenue management, it's just how tight and ensuring that accruals that were raised, with accruals you'll find that the entity actually raises accruals, but with accrual, because it's an accounting entry at the end of the financial year, immediately when you come into the following year, you will have to reverse it so that your normal billing processes can kick in to allow and to afford you an opportunity to then start engaging with the normal collection processes. And you'll find that that did not necessarily happen timelessly to allow for the collection and the normal billing processes to kick in. And as a result, we then noted some of the non-compliances within revenue management. And within procurement, I think we managed to clear a coupler, which last year you would recall we had a lot of non-compliances within procurement and contract management, but this year we are sitting predominantly with just deviations which were approved. But when you look at the reasons for the deviations, you still don't really see the impracticality of going through a normal big process. also then noted some non-compliances around consequence management, where, for example, in some cases, disciplinary hearings were not yet held for some of the cases, or some disciplinary steps not yet taken on some of the irregular expenditures, fruitless, and so forth. And when then we look at, Honorable Chair, around the status of corporate, what we will do later on, we'll discuss on the annual performance plan and the predetermined objectives a bit later. There's a specific slide that we have prepared to talk to the outcomes there. So that one will still park it for them. And then we then look, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, at saying, when we look at these outcomes, how did we see the assurance levels fare as well as the internal controls? And you will see that we try to look at the internal controls at a high level when we look at about leadership, financial management, as well as within governance. And then we also look at the assurance provided by management, being the best level provider, and then the second level provider being the assurance providers, part of it being internal audit and audit committee, and then obviously as well the third level of assurance provision, which resides with the portfolio committee through its oversight activities. When you look at the message within the slide, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we say, to the extent of WRC, you will actually realize that these internal controls, key controls, are intact and they are working appropriately. And hence, they actually resulted in clean opinion. Within the department and the water treating, there are still a couple of challenges that we need to address. We still looked at some of the activities that happened within the leadership branch, and we still said some of activities still needs to happen within the leadership category there. You would recall that I just reflected that now we said there are some of the deviations that would be approved even though the reasons that do not indicate any practicalities to have gone within beats that reside between that management level and leadership levels. And you would also see that some of the financial and performance management areas, there are still property, plant and equipment that's qualified in the entity, there's still commitment that's qualified in the department, and that really talks to financial and performance disciplines that we're supposed to guard against any anomalies within those environments. And then you will see then there's this governance there that we say is fully clean. And here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we felt as the audit team that even though the outcomes are still not where we need to be, when you look at the governance structures, when you look at audit committees, when you look at portfolio committees, you find that meetings are held, engagements are held, but you'll find that management's response is a bit slow to most of the recommendations that come out of either the audit committee or the portfolio committee and so forth. And I think you would recall that we had some couple of instances even in our engagements with Parliament where there were no responses that were coming out from management on questions that were put forth by honorable members. And I think that's why we still felt that the governance structures would still deserve to be reflected on the efforts that they would have put regardless of the outcomes. And that is why even when you look at the far left, you'll see that internal audit committee and the portfolio committee still remain providing assurance. And we said we need to work a bit more on senior management, accounting, officer as well as executive authority to get to the required outcomes, and mainly within the entity as well as the department. Okay, and then when we look at this other slide, Honorable Chair, that's when we look at the key controls that we would want in place, and we look, reflect through at these key controls through what we call our status of records review, and you will see that there are some honeycombs there that reflect areas of our principle counting principles that we look at and we reflect on how well the portfolio has done, particularly within the department and the entity. And you will see that we have about six of the areas where we still say there's some intervention that is required, and there are about two of them where we say although they are not at a good status, there's still some concerns there that need to be addressed. And that one being the IT management and the HR management. When you look at the ones that really require intervention, where we say intervention is required, is around the financial health, which we will look at, and oversight monitoring, the financial management, performance management, procurement and contract management, and compliance management. And mainly these areas are the ones around where you would see that we had some form of something to say around them within our audit reports. And that is why we still reflect them as requiring some intervention, so that we can move into a clean state. And I think the reason why we emphasize this is because this is linked directly with the controls that are within the system. And we always say when the qualification emanates, management would need to go back to the control environment that guards against that specific area to ensure that the controls are improved, and that the controls can actually on their own prevent and detect any anomalies even before the external audit process kicks in. And I'll move on to this next slide. And this is the slide that will talk to the predetermined objectives that I spoke about, that I said we will come to later. And here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I would invite my colleague to assist me.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister, and the Department. With this slide, what we have done here is to look at the budget spend per program as well as the achievements per program. And then what we've indicated is that there were material misstatements that were corrected on the predetermined objective on the annual performance report for both program 4, program 3, and program 2. However, on program 4 and on program 3, the department could not correct some of the material misstatements that we've identified, and this resulted then in the material findings that was included in the audit report. Just to note that with the predetermined objective, the findings is included in the department's audit report, although it might also consist of the water trading, but everything is consolidated into the department. So the main reason for the material findings this year was due to the revised annual performance plan. In the revised annual performance plan, there were certain reasons provided, and with the supporting evidence that we've audited, it did not agree. So for program 3, for example, where the mega bulk infrastructure project was reduced from 3 to 0, one of the projects was due to budget constraints. However, that specific project was a grant, a 5B grant, and the money was transferred. So therefore, we said as auditors that we are disagreeing with that reason that was included in the annual performance report. With program 4, due to the changes that the department did on the annual performance plan, they made some specific statements, for example, on the green drop and the blue drop, where they actually indicate that they're going to do a full assessment this year. However, during our audit, the full assessment wasn't done, and therefore that is why we were indicating that the target was not specific, because what they did on the ground was not in relation to what they actually said in the revised APP. And then with the applications of the water user licenses, there it was also not reliable, because the process that they start off with the applications, we could not confirm the completeness of that. So that then resulted in program 3 and in program 4 then having those material findings included in the audit report. As part of our audit also, we then also do the principle of follow the money. Last year we also started with looking at certain key projects that we selected during the audit, and then we would look at the four areas per some of those projects. We would look at if the budget was spent or if there was a budget for that specific project. We would look at the financial statements, looking at was it correctly included in the financial statements, etc. We will then also look at at the supply chain processes that occurred or contract management. And then we will also look at the follow the money, then looking at the actual achievement of the predetermined objectives. So on this slide, we have then the seven key projects that we've selected for this year. What I would like to highlight is one of them, for example, was the emergency intervention on the Vaal refurbishment wastewater treatment plant. There you will see that everything was red. The main reason for the concerns or the material findings raised is due to the fact that it was an emergency intervention, so there wasn't any budget originally set for that project. With the financial management, some of the refurbishments was not actually included in the financials as assets. Supply chain procurement processes wasn't properly followed. And then obviously, because it was an emergency, there were obviously no predetermined objectives set in the beginning. With the West Coast desalination plant, you will see it's in blue color, where we actually say that it wasn't audited. The reason for that is the directive was issued in December. However, the directive was then retracted in June, due to the fact that the Cape Town, City of Cape Town said that they would rather want to have another process, and then the directive was then removed. With war on leaks, you will also see that there is a lot of red, because originally there wasn't any budget for war on leaks. The revised APP then included the war on leaks on program 1. And then on financial management, both for bucket eradication and for war on leaks, those two resulted then in unauthorized expenditure in the financial statements.
And then the next one, these are the ones that are mainly or resides within the water trading entity, and I think on this one what we did was to say, you'd see that all from 8 up until 13 are the ones that we've already reflected on as of last year already. What we decided to do was to do a follow-up on this one specifically so that we can follow through on all the retractions and to also see whether the picture changes, and you would realize that the picture just remains predominantly the same. It's still a couple of red colors and a few within the financial management, which is just the accounting element of it. One that we included specifically for this year was the number 14 on the acid mine drainage, and you will see that also this one is implemented by TCTA, and on the issues that emanated out of this one specifically was we noted that there was a budget that was allocated for a long-term solution. However, that budget was spent mostly on the short-term solution, as there were some delays on the long-term solution. And the financial, you'll see also that the financial management is red as well, because while the short-term solution had already been completed and commissioned, it still remained within the accounting entries as a work in progress, and that was mainly because the entity had not yet collated or received all the information to be able for them to account for that asset in accordance with the framework, which would require them to componentize the asset and to treat the components as if though they were individual assets, and for them to depreciate them separately. Because of that challenge, it still remained within work in progress. It's actually part of that qualification that where they were unable to link that work in progress on projects that were made done by TCTA and to assess them for impairment. And when you look at the compliance area, that is where we noted some of the variation orders that went through TCTA, where they had actually attracted some irregular expenditures, and as a result, the principal would incur that irregular expenditure. And on predetermined objectives, it's just to say we had made targets specifically on the long term, which we did not make any traction on because the spending still went through on short term solutions. And then we'll move on, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, to the financial health. On the financial health, I think a few things that we just want to mention around this area is that you'll realize that for both the department and the water trading entity, we still reported a material uncertainty on the going concern on both entities. If you look specifically at the department, you'll realize that the department is still in an overdraft position, and you'll see that the accruals and the payables have still increased significantly. And you would have noted as well that they still have incurred some unauthorized expenditures, which is in excess, obviously. And within the WTE, you will also realize a few things. There would be that the WTE still also have an overdrawn bank balance, and the liabilities, in particular that one of TCTA, also still increases significantly, even though there's a reduction within the overdraft itself. So the overdraft reduction results in an increase in the liabilities towards TCTA. You will see that it's not necessarily it's more withholding payments to TCTA that result in the cash position improving, not necessarily an increase in the balance itself. You would also note that when we look at the going concern, we look at 12 months ahead, which is the 18-19, and would also take note that the budget for WTE was approved towards, I think, on the 3rd of August 2018. So that also start indicating some of the uncertainties that would have existed within the 12-month period. And again, we still reported a deficit, and I think also within the compliance area, we've already reflected on payments happening within 30 days, and you would have seen that the credit payment terms would have also increased a bit. So that is why we still remain with the material uncertainty around the going concern element. I think the graphs there are to depict the situations, and mainly this one which refers to that of the department. I will ask my colleague just to briefly talk to it.
Thank you. This is just indicating that the department had an overdraft of 119 million and an authorized of 526 million. The surplus went up a little bit, but that is due to the fact that the expenditure reduced, obviously, within the department. So the cash, the overdraft is 119 million.
And then on the WTE, section we've already highlighted, if you look at that blue color that talks to the cash position, you would see that compared to last year, 2016-17, it was at about 2.1 billion. It improved to 1.4 billion this year. And that's where we are alluding to the fact that generally, the bulk of that improvement, you would see that it sits within an increased payable to TCTA that sits in the current. And when you look at whether there was a surplus or a deficit, you also see that has improved slightly. And I think as well, we have also spoken about the payment terms that we have also increased, and we still talks to this cash flow challenges. The next slide, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that's where we look at the unauthorized, irregular, as well as fruitless expenditure, and we try to depict it over a couple of years. You will see when you look at the first top layer, on the far left, we have our definition still consistent with last year, and then we reflect then on the figures that are there, either unauthorized, fruitless, and irregular expenditure, and you realize that we still have incurred some unauthorized expenditure this year, as we've already alluded to, and mostly made up of, if you go into the feather bracket there where we try and indicate the material things that contributed towards that, is the payments towards water leaks, as well as the payments towards the budget eradication. The figures we give there are about 392 towards water leaks, 392 million, as well as 134 million. If you look at the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, you also see that it also slightly increased from last year. It's now sitting at about 546 million. And on the far column there, that's where we also depict what are the significant contributors towards that. So you'll realize that resulting interest it's sitting at about 11.5 million, and also then what happens is within the entity itself there are abnormal costs that would have increased within the projects. If you look at the nature of projects, with projects, if you don't necessarily have money to still fund them, you still there still are activities that happen either at an idling level, which you still fund even though you don't have additional money to fund other activities. For example, if you have a project that you're experiencing cash flows to finance, you'd still have labor that sits or that would be there within the project that would still continuously incur costs even though they are not necessarily productive on site. So those are some of the drivers that sits within those abnormal costs. If you also look at the far right column there, we also still indicate that you should note that those figures are still qualified for both the main account as well as for the entity. If we go into irregular expenditure, you will also see that irregular expenditure an improvement because it has reduced slightly from previous year, and here to give context to that bar, you would recall that last year when we were discussing the outcomes, we had qualified irregular expenditure on both accounts, on both the department as well as the entity. And this year what the entity was able to do was to go back to last year and restate the last year figures. So that last year figures would have changed because they went back to restate the figures, because then the qualification, they needed to clear the qualification, and the way in which you clear qualification is you go back, you restate that balance to the correct balance. So when they reflect the correct balance and in comparison with the current year, then you see that it is a slight, there's a slight decline on that one. So that is the reason why you see that the darker blue bar for 17-18 is lesser than the 16-17 one, even though in our discussions last year the 16-17 one was way lesser than the by that amount. So the figures that you're looking at this year is about 3.6 billion, and compared to last year at about 4.6 billion due to the restatement. And you will also take note that the major contributor for the department is expenditure that happens within the implementing agent space, as we would have alluded to last year. And it's still the same situation in that, and you would also see that they were not able to thresh out the system to allow them to actually fully restate what would have happened last year. So as a result, there was still a qualification on the department on the completeness of irregular expenditures. So when you look at that figure of 3.6 billion, you still look at it in the context that for the department, there's still a qualification on the completeness of that figure. So if they can clear the system and say are able to account for all irregularities within the implementing space, you might see a similar position with what happened when the entity went back to restate their figures, which is an increase in the amount that is disclosed. So the next one, Honorable Chair, just to depict that information in a different form that of graphs. I think the main still something to note that is that the entity was able to reflect correctly the amounts that they did not reflect in the prior year through a restatement, and as a result of that restatement and the proper accounting of the current year irregular expenditure, they were able to remove the qualification on the completeness of irregular expenditures. And again, if you look at just on the percentages of expenses that were uncovered this year, so with irregular expenditure, for example, you'll find that a contract that was awarded in 16-17 that we have concluded that it's irregular. When management processes a payment in 17-18, that payment still assumes the same nature of an irregular expenditure as we have already concluded on the contract itself. So any further future payments on a contract that has been concluded to be irregular also become irregular. So what we wanted to reflect here is how much of the irregular expenditures that sits within the current amount, that one of 3.6 billion, relates to prior year contracts that we have already concluded to be irregular, that management still needed to service them. So we just wanted to highlight that in form of percentages, and that's 7%, while the genuine ones that have actually that we have covered and disclosed for the first time, that 22%. My apologies. And if you look now, Honorable Chair, as well on the bottom line, you will see that we want to reflect that WRC did not have any SEM compliance finding, and as a result, contributing to the entire portfolio, it indicates that there's a 33% that is green, whereas both within the department and the entity, there were still some supply chain management challenges that we experienced.
This slide,
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we depict the nature of procurement irregularities that we have noted, and just on the basis of quantum, say which one contributed the most, and you'll see that we have noted that local content and minimum thresholds were not necessarily adhered to, competitive bidding not invited where it was not impractical to do so, where there were no declarations of interest that were submitted, and preference point systems not applied correctly, and where there were suppliers with their tax affairs that were not in order, as well as where there were performance contracts that were not monitored. So when you don't monitor performance contracts, you find that you go over your contract amount and it results in variation orders which would become irregular expenditures if not put up correctly. And then on the next slide, that's where we talk more towards the consequence management, and this is where we say, if you look at, let me start with the green and the red one. You recall that when we spoke about our compliance outcomes, we did mention that there were some of the investigations which were there were some of the areas where disciplinary steps were not taken and where disciplinary hearings were not taken. So if you look at the 15-16, here you would realize that both the entity and the department had actually gone and done disciplinary hearings as well as taking disciplinary steps, and you would recall that there was a bribe specifically for the department to clear all the investigations that needed to happen on irregular expenditures as well as fruitless. I think there was also a SCOPA program that was followed to follow through on this matter, and they were able to clear it. However, there were still some areas within 16-17 where the investigations were not done, and where there were disciplinary steps and disciplinary hearings that still did not. Were still not done, so within the department and the entities. And as well as when you look at, where there were allegations which were not investigated, you'll see that the department and the entities still contributed towards that. And also we reflected on whether there were investigations that were taking generally longer to actually be concluded, and longer we always tend to think about 3 months or so, which exceeds 3 months. So you see that still is still prevalent within the entity as well as the department. Slide, Honorable Chair, which is coming towards the concluding part, it's where we reflect on when we sit back and we say what are the causes of this outcome that we're presenting, what are the causes of these challenges within the financial compliance as well as predetermined objectives. And you'll see in the far block there, that's where we're trying to look at the root causes, and we in the middle part, that's where we look at the ex- creative authority's commitments and then some of the recommendations that we suggest. You will look, you'll see that Honorable Chair, there's we noted that the slow response from management on some of the of the activities. You'll see that, for example, where there were qualification areas in the prior year, we always recommend that there should be action plans that are put in place, and in order to make sure that those the recurrence of those anomalies does not happen, you'll find that either the action plans are done or the action plans are not adequate enough to actually address the root causes that caused those things. We also reflected on the fact that there were a bit of instabilities in key positions within the leadership. Would recall that the accounting officer position has been a number of people who would be acting in that position, and within the CFO areas as well that got affected. You will see that there were some, as we've already spoken about, consequence management that's not really coming through as strong as we would want to see, as well as officials where we would previously would be able to say some of the actions that were taken were not necessarily in the best interest of the department, of the entity. If you look at, for example, your war on leaks, you even see that the department and the entity are struggling to locate it. Where would it really be more located? And start asking to say, but why did we even have to go into such a project? So just that due care that you would ideally want to see within the leadership. I think just at the bottom there, that's where we're reflecting other things like implementing agency controls that still needs to be beefed up. We still need to see some budgetary processes that really are developed on time and that we are able to stick to, and that we are able to once we are comfortable that these are the things that needs to drive the activities of the department and the entity, we go by them. Budgets, as we all know, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, is a tool that you can still change during the year, but when you change it cognizantly and make sure that the rippling effects thereof are also addressed accordingly, and as well as making sure that there's proper processes, so it's adequate enough for record keeping. If you look at the qualifications within W, or the water trading entity, it talks to some of the information that was not available for management to actually link the projects to the balance that they would have within the projects that were implemented by TCA. So it's those things that we say, Honorable Chair, could have cost the results that we are providing today. And we have met with the minister, and when we look at the minister, Honorable Chair, we look at the position. We don't segment it according to the incumbent, because you would recall that during the period that we are reporting to, there was another minister, there were two ministers who would have sat at different times. So we got some commitments. Risk assessment that had to be done, and the establishment of a structure within the department, which those commitments were able to be done, and there were others that were still in progress, which was to strengthen the controls within the implementing project, within the implementing agent, which we said they are still in progress because they are not yet at the position where they are able to clear the qualification that we still had on irregular expenditures resulting out of that, and as well strengthen the internal controls within commitment, within disclosure notes of commitment, irregular expenditures, and those are still in progress because we still see out of these outcomes the same result that we still see commitments being qualified, we still see irregular expenditure being qualified at the main at the department, and we still see frequency and wasteful expenditure qualified in both the water trading and the department. And then we also, Honorable Chair, say there's one that still not that we still say had not yet been implemented, which was the ownership and the control on processes of the department. If you look at some of the recommendations that we put through Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is to say there should be some form of feedback that is provided specific to the areas of challenge, which is specific to the areas of qualifications. So here we are, without being prescriptive, it's say on when we meet to discuss, for example, the action plans that management would have put in place, we need to focus on specifically those that talk to the areas of qualification paragraphs. Those that would talk to the property, plant and equipment for the entity, those that would talk to the implementing agents on the main account, and we need to robustly interrogate them. We will also do the same from our side. Internal audit will also do the same from their side, and we also, without being prescriptive, plead that it be the focus of the portfolio committee as well, and as well as looking at the status of the of key controls. And the status of key controls, the good thing about it, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, it evolves with time. So you look at a control, for example, where you say, have you done a reconciliation of your assets? And if that has been done, you give it a tick to say that has been done. And you further go into it in the following year to say, in the reconciliation that you have done, how many reconciling items do you have that you have not yet attended to? And you do that in comparison with the last time that we were engaging on this matter, so that we can start looking at whether are we reducing the number of items that sits within our reconciling items as a key control that keeps evolving. And obviously further on, we can even go into the details of seeing what sits within this area that's unreconciled. What are those things that sit in there? Then we start getting the details around those areas of those things. So I think even in that same evolving manner, if we can keep requesting such, you'll see that we will assist both the department and the entity to have sound controls at the end of the day. And I think also if we can look at ensuring stability and leadership by filling in the positions that are vacant and where particularly the accounting officer position as well as the CFO position, which we always say those are critical positions that require to be filled in most at all times. And also, as I've already alluded, let's look at the action plans for specific items that resulted in this outcomes that we are highlighting here, Honorable Chair. And then, Honorable Chair, this slide is the one that depicts where we say it's a formula here that the office has adopted from some brilliant guys who do their research to say in a government environment you will see that there are a couple of things that are played. The players there, it's monopoly, it's discretion and accountability. So you will see that monopoly becomes consistent there, because government has got drives some other service deliveries that resides within government and cannot be outsourced to private sector areas. The provision of water, for example, resides within government, cannot necessarily outsource it because it's a constitutional right that you would want to ensure that it is provided. You have that sole right to provide that water, and discretion, management will always take discretion by deciding to do particular things. Each time they act, they would act out of a particular discretion or management decision that they would have taken. Whether to include a particular thing in the APP, to remove the particular thing in the APP, that comes with discretion. So those two would always be there. And you'll probably find that they will always be there at the same volume or at the same level of input. However, the ones that we say has got a potential of changing their accountability, where you find that having the luxury of being in this monopoly area and being able to take those discretions or decisions, if accountability becomes lower, then that would have a potential increase in the corruption levels. So that is why when you look at that top layer, you will see that the corruption indicator seems to have increased, ballooned a bit bigger than your monopoly discretion, and you will see that the accountability has shrunk a bit. So we're saying where that accountability levels shrink, where accountability is not taken care of, there's a potential thrive or market for corruption. But where that accountability increases, you'll see that your corruption levels, market corruption would shrink. So that's the one that we would want to also talk to when we talk to this accountability will, and perhaps close on that. And if you look at the bottom of it here, we say if that corruption increases, it will have a direct impact on our budget, on our ability and on the level of our service delivery. So we would need to ensure that we increase our level of accountability, reduce the level of corruption or the market of corruption, and that in turn will also increase or improve our ability to provide service delivery. And I think that is all that we had on the presentation, Honorable Chair. So we are ready to take the questions from Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome, Minister, and your team in a session that does not require you for now. However, you are most welcome. You did make a point clear that the department is expected to be with us as we engage with the Auditor General. There may be some areas that would require the department to respond directly without having to delay the issues. That's the reason why the department is here with us. I can assure you, Stephen, that with these members of parliament here, you can brace yourself for a very a bold discussion on the very last submission on that philosophical understanding of what really directs corruption. Whether can this only be a domain for a public sector, whether you do not have such in the private sector as well. We have been having a discussion that talks to the ownership of our water resource in this country. And that discussion ensues. And not in the midst of a drought, that's where you test it, among others, that you have some two farmers in Grabo here in Cape Town who would have said, as a gesture of goodwill, here is water. That is supposed to be a national asset, but that is located in a few hands. That's the kind of debate, and again, the question would be, what would you then call that? Anyway, if also become people of color through your colorful submissions, that's what I refer to, not, you know, this other person of color. There's a very heated debate this day and age. You know, there was a shutdown, you know, so-called colored people and so on and so forth. You know, but you are the people of color. Whether we shall be able to see to the finish of that race when that hurdle falls. That person typically, in any typical race, finishes off the race. The hurdle having fallen. And what happens to that hurdle? In the case of the department, talking here about qualified opinion, the hurdle is down there. Whether you shall be able to finish off still being able to pick up that hurdle. So those are some of the questions that are relevant as we engage in this discussion. You are raising also an issue about blue drop and green drop as well. This is a matter, Minister, that we take a very keen interest in. Last time we had such a report was in 2014. By right, these are supposed to be annual reports. The importance of those reports, they talk to us being able to determine the quality of our water and also how we treat our water back into the system, whether ecosystem or in the pipeline, for those that recycle water. With the amount of wastewater treatment plants that we have in the country, over 820 odd, the functionality of those, these talk to this very issue about the green drop and blue drop. And if you are to be talking of any plan that you are going to have as a country, these reports become quite key. And if you do not have those reports, you are certainly going to struggle in planning on that quality water being availed for people out there. I would imagine it should be of interest to all the members who are here as we listen to the AG's report on the long investigations that have been taking place within the department. there are a limited number of issues, irregular, unauthorized, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. Whether, how long you do state 3 months being long, beyond that, it is something else. You shall have to call it names. Now, these are some of the issues that are being raised by the AG's office. And again, this is all part of our own preparation and capacity building as we prepare for the department to come before us later in the afternoon. Okay, members, if there are any specific issues, unless you want to comment on some of those, vice members, Mr. Mbuni.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've already greeted everyone except the Minister of Justice now, and the Morning Minister. You know, when I looked at the last slide, where you spoke about corruption, corruption is equal to what, monopoly, class discretion. I just thought of, will there be anyone, any of the one which will look at prison is equal to consequence management plus case opening minus popularity. You see, or we put it the other way, we say good governance is equal to ethics plus human capability development minus corruption. So if we can get into that, interact into that one, it will help us a lot, because sometimes it's a question of fear, anxiety, which does not take us to the one that I have just indicated. On your slide, 14, bullet number 2, you've indicated that there's this inadequate monitoring of the supply chain management legislation, and then the last words, they were due to poorly motivated deviation. I want just to understand that one, so that I have clarity when I get into the department. And another issue here, when you are presenting, it indicated that the department's cause for the going concern is the failure by implementing agents to follow proper procedures. Are you saying to us the department is doing very, very well, but because of the implementing agents that are doing as they wish, that is that the cause of them being on this qualified audit? Or are there any other issues within the department itself taking away the implementing agents that are causing the same problem that we're finding ourselves in? If there are no, they are available, can you please name them? When you are doing your audit, these are specific challenges by the department, you see, in the exception of the monitoring. With the monitoring and of the implementing agent, that one is I'm very clear. Yeah, thank you very much,
I did warn you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, this report is like a horror story that just continues year after year. Financial management regressed, oversight and monitoring regressed, financial health regressed. But the worrying concern is, Chairperson, the department's got no problem spending money, but we see nothing for it. If you look at Program 3, Water Infrastructure Development, spent 95% of the budget, achieved on this program only 29%. Exactly the same problem last year. No problem spending the money, nothing to show for it. Now, Chairperson, I want the AG to tell us, we've got a new minister, and he inherited a department that is in a very, very bad state. Now, the AG indicates that the biggest problem here is leadership taking control of this. Now, that eventually will include the minister, leadership, and the DG, ADG and DDG is taking this department forward. We cannot get another year. And unfortunately, Chairperson, we informed in the first quarter of the new financial year, excluding administration and paying salaries, the administration bill, they only spent 3% of that money is spent in infrastructure. They can only show us 3%. That was in the first quarter. I'm worried we're going to sit next year here with once again exactly the same problem. Regressing in this department. And like you said, Chairperson, 827 wastewater treatment plants collapsed. What is collapsing? Where I did oversight previously and went back there, it's even worse than we had previously. How do we rectify this problem? I see the recommendation. We must ask this report and we must do this and we must do this. But Chairperson, if the leadership does not come from the minister and he tackles the problem to appoint qualified people, I was thinking to myself, water trading entity, water research commission, sorry, they're doing well in the year. Doing something right, maybe it's small, but how do we duplicate that within a water trading entity and the department? And it comes back to good leadership. We see when we get our reports from the Water Research Commission, excellent reports. There is enthusiasm within the people that present that to us. We don't see it yet. Is it because I'm not sure whether I'll be here next week, next month, next year? Or is it just the people that we've got there? They are really not capable of doing the job and then we must get rid of them. Because eventually, the people on the ground, the people that this department serves, are not getting value for money. And so we've got to stop it now. We cannot go on and on. Previously we had a problem. We had an arrogant minister that whatever you tell them in this portfolio committee, the minister will just follow their own way of doing. Now, I'm glad we've got a new minister, and what he started to do, I can agree with what the minister do, but we haven't got time any further, Chairperson. We must change it now. And maybe the minister must answer, but from the Auditor General, what do you see and how long time do we have to change it? Because every month, every day, or every week that we go into the new financial year, we're just continuing on the same path we had in the previous years. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Hugh, your comment. Okay. So that we don't repeat what we sort of gone through, you might wish to advise us on the specific one. We have another emergency program in Davao. You are saying it to yourself that no due procurement processes were followed. So that we are guided here. In emergency, as we understand, it talks to 3-month program. also you have been saying it a few times, not now, but looking back, even if that procurement policy, procurement process takes place, it has to have an element of being taken out on a public bid, whether it takes a week or two. You are on record to have mentioned that. So that we are consistent with what we want to do, having to do things right. Part of the irregular expenditure talks to the budget eradication program. Can't remember where my notes are. To an extent, we would have wished to see things differently, given the investigations that have been taking place. Consequence management has been one major issue that has been escaping our interactions with yourselves. And perhaps, yes, I've got it here. Perhaps this is one of the areas that we might have to move boldly on. Your PMFA is very straightforward. Those that transgress must be taken to book. In a nutshell, that's what it says. And that happens through such an investigation on those irregular expenditures that you shall have been talking about. Now, in so far as your budget eradication programs are concerned, to be more direct, the notes I have here, they talk to the unjustified deviations on infrastructure programs. Among others, here it talks about on this area of budget eradication program, your Varanani and NJR firms that were appointed without following any supply chain management processes. And altogether, these talk to 1.5 billion rand. If you can also reflect on that, just one specific area. Thank you. AJ?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think I want to start with the emergency one on the Vol refurbishment. One of the things that we've identified when we've audited this is due to the fact that the department is going on emergency. The department doesn't have, and I used to, maybe the word is wrong, to have a methodology on what the processes and procedures to follow in the department when they actually have this type of emergency that they need to deal with. Because one of the things that we've identified during that process, auditing that emergency, was that they didn't comply with the grant conditions, for example, because it's all emergency. So what then happened was they never entered into service level agreements with those municipalities where they assisted the refurbishment. It resulted again in not maintaining the refurbishment that was done, which then ultimately resulted in the wastewater plant actually not being in the condition that they would have wanted it to. So for these type of emergencies, what we've indicated when we've discussed with the department was to say they need to start developing procedures and processes within the department where they almost like like have a checkbox to say, this is what needs to happen when they have emergencies. And then the same with the supply chain then, is to make sure that if they then deviate, how are they going to deviate so that it does not result in irregular expenditure at the end of the day. So that is on the emergency. If I can quickly touch on the implementing agents, the department is using a lot of implementing agents, and I know last year there was an intervention from the department to try and manage or monitor your implementing agents better. Most of the irregular expenditure is coming still from old projects. So I do know that at one stage they did allude to the fact that they can't get that information because of the projects that's really very old. And with the previous CFO, there was an indication that they are trying to ensure that the implementing agents, when going on procurement now, new procurement, that they actually follow a proper procurement process. So they are trying to manage the implementing agents better with the new projects that they are implementing.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Maybe just to let one as well on the emergency aspect, Honorable Chair. You will realize that with the procurement processes that are currently crafted, when you want to deviate, you can actually be you can look at certain aspects of the areas in which you want to deviate for. For example, normally with a tender, we would say the tender needs to be advertised for 21 days. So you can actually then start saying, maybe because this is an emergency, I can still advertise the tender, but it will not be for 21 days. So you start considering cutting short the 21 days. Because then what that does, Honorable Chair, is it still gives you the ability and the comfort of testing the market. The challenge with putting away the entire testing of the market, which is depicted within these either quotations or tenders or so forth, is you get exposed in the sense that whoever you approach has got a figure that if you would have had an ability to compare it with someone else, you could have probably gained some form of a benefit or a form of a fairer or a reduced price. If you go out into a contract that you have not yet tested the price, you are more susceptible to actually be engaging in an inflated price, as has been demonstrated, for example, with the previous projects that we have spoken about in this area, where you find that a project that was expected to be, let's say, around 90 million ends up being into the millions or even into the billions. So that's the exposure that you get. So ideally you would want to say, how do I still move quickly, yet I am still ensuring that I safeguard the pest that I'm exposing. So you can start looking at either reducing the time, either instead of going out on a tender, you go on a quotation basis. And I think now the good thing about it is even Treasury wants to provide concurrence, because then they also start advising to say, yes, deviate, but deviate by reducing the timeline, or deviate by going on a tender, also so those type of things. But I think if we can generally just picture ourselves walking into a market that we have not yet tested the price, that we are exposing our peers to inflated prices, we will always tread with caution, and we will always want to defend that peers by all other means. And then Honorable Chair, yes, if you look at legislation around emergency thing, around emergency, we still are within that Disaster Management Act that prescribes around 3 months, and that is what also Treasury runs with as a period of saying. Ideally, your emergency should be extinguished. extinguished within three months. Otherwise, you start engaging in a bit of a longer term projects that you would probably need to plan properly for and implement a well thought out strategy on going about that one. And then Honorable Chair, I would like to touch on Honorable Mguni's concern on, I'll start with the going concern. The going concern, and I think he also mentioned the implementing agents, whether within the department itself there are any irregularities that emanate from the department processes. If you look at the bigger bulk of what was disclosed in that slide that we actually indicated, it talks to mostly the areas in which the trading entity itself applied itself. So that is within the entities. If you look, for example, on what we had discussed when we were discussing, for example, the corrections of the bid adjudication committee, that's an internal control that was within the department and the entity, and you still find that there was some occurrence of irregularities as a result of non-correcting of those. Over and above, yes, the other aspects which still emanate from implementing agents. So that is why we were saying, if you look at around compliance, there's still areas that the department and the entity themselves would need to be able to clear themselves, even before they can clear the implementing agents. But because it's not a matter of saying, I will go for this one and then go for that other one, you would still want them to probably run concurrently, have a way of assessing your implementing engagement processes and systems that manages that transaction, and while you also still deal with your normal procurement processes. You also mentioned Honorable Nguni around the challenges of irregular expenditures within the department, where you find that deviations are not properly motivated, and you present a justifiable reason. So here, there's a lot of examples, but I think just for the purposes of our discussion, I could pick a case in point where I say, we met, even though it was in the prior year, a case where there was a contamination in the Vaal River system. Okay? And I think it was at the time this Sunday news, Carte Blanche, that wanted to run with the program. And when that program came to the attention of the DG, then the DG felt that it was reasonable to deviate immediately. But we said, okay, let's sit back and see whether there is no element of control that was within the department that could have been done to prevent us sitting in an emergency position that we are currently sitting on. Because at that time, we don't deny that it has an element of being an emergency. However, when you start looking at the processes within the department, you will see that there are specific units that would need to be reporting continuously on the well-being of the rivers. So there's a program that looks at the well-being of the rivers, how clean the rivers are, the pollution into the rivers, who's polluting into the rivers, and food fines. And we actually noted that there was a report already that were being presented from that process that had already indicated that there could be problems with the pollution of water within the Vaal River system. And we were saying, but then it implies that the department would have sat on those reports and did not act adequately when they still had enough time to. They had to wait up until they come to a point where it becomes an emergency to motivate and say, now we are sitting in an emergency we start discussing and saying, but should you have taken heed of the reports, you would have had enough time to still act. And as well, when you look at within the emergency space, you will see that legislation is specific as to what is an emergency, something that causes health, that causes, that dies, that could have death element. And this was a classical example because it had an indication of that. But it also did not exonerate them on being able to have planned properly when they received the information earlier that could have allowed them to still engage in proper processes. And then I think, Honorable Mbuni, you also talked about us looking at that philosophical thing and put in governance ethics as well as capabilities. I think that is an interesting way as well of looking at it. And I think I fully concur with you that those are elements that we need to go towards. But I think this becomes very well linked together within the accountability model that we are alluding to, together with ensuring that, remembering that accountability wheel that we have. We have space where we do our proper planning, we do our checks, we do our monitoring. Because even with ethical people, you still need to put a check in your checks and balances around it. In our office, for example, we declare almost every year, even after declarations, there's a specific unit that goes and checks how complete you have declared. And if you are found wanting, there are definite consequences that we put in place. And that is, I think, what sits within that accountability wheel that we say. Let us be accountable for the actions that we do. Let us plan properly. But where we are, where there are anomalies from the expected output, let us be bold enough, Honorable Chair, as you said, to put in place consequence management. And by so doing, hope to deter the efforts that one would want to do with ulterior motives. And I think you can't overemphasize the importance of consequence management, because one, it corrects the individual's behavior, and two, it corrects the behavior of those who are observing, who had similar intentions, even in different circumstances. So I think, Honorable Chair, you also mentioned that we need now to start discussing around consequence management, the bold moves that we ought to take. And I think if you look at the portfolio, you would realize that there has been quite a lot of scrutiny, either around audits, around investigations that have happened, and there are reports that talk to some of those areas of concern. And I always say to my colleague, you know, when you have the right intentions of correcting behavior and you really want to demonstrate that you want to take a stance against untoward behavior, you use the very current reports that are there. There are low-lying fruits where, you know, the reports are there, investigations done, concluded with recommendations, and those are things that we always refer to as low-lying fruits. That doesn't even require you to go into another investigation. Already have reports, act on the reports and be seen to be doing the right thing. Because then you encourage people to do the right things even when they are not being checked. Oh, all right. And then Honorable Basson, you mentioned specifically around the leadership and what we look at in comparison with WRC. And I think here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, if you look at the history of the position of accounting officer within the department, I think we did a presentation on Honorable Chair, if I'm not, if
I'm not mistaken, where we reflected over a couple of years. I think we were doing it for the joint committee at the time, where you can really clearly see that the turnaround in that position is quite high. Right? And what that creates is I'm sitting now next to my colleague. And if tomorrow I can be given an opportunity to act in a higher position where we report, truth of the matter is I still regard her as my colleague because I am in an acting position. And what that does is it does not fully empower me as a person who has been placed in an acting position to can actually even administer serious consequence management on her, because at times I still see and view her as my peer, as my colleague. So I think if we can make a conscious effort and decision to ensure stability at accounting officer position, at accounting officer level, we will start seeing that the bigger chunk of our battles will subside. I think that becomes key to make sure that we stabilize that position, that role. Secondly, we must ensure that obviously the supporting roles are equally and those that we specifically see as criticals for the outcomes of that representing becomes at the CFO position. We need to ensure that the CFO positions are equally stable and equally filled with capable candidates of good ethics. And I think that would then start translating, because the department and the entity is an interesting organization in that it is a bit complex on its own, and you don't want to burden the complexities of the technicalities of this unit with an unstable leadership, because when that happens, you will see that there's a whole lot of things that pop up that you now, if you sit back and you start saying, but why are these things happening, you may even miss the boat altogether. You might, one, start thinking the technicalities are overpowering the skill that I have, and two, the instability on the leadership could have a direct impact. But if we try resolve it at a layer at a time, we should be able to resolve this. And I think from our side, if that can be stabilized, we should be able to see bear fruits out of this.
The simple point you are raising on this very matter is that the department must have a DG ASAP.
Chairperson, I think we can all agree that the performance of the department in this financial year under review is very, very poor. 52% achievement of the targets. But despite that, Chairperson, I need to know who agreed to pay performance bonuses of 31.5 million to officials with this kind of achievements. They pay themselves. So someone takes the decision to pay them, whether it's the minister, the previous minister, the DG, the acting DG. The mere fact is, it doesn't matter whether they only achieve 29% of their program. It's no concern of the individual, they'll get a bonus. And we talk about 31.5 million rand bonus paid in this financial year.
on the specific bonus.
So page 155 to 161 of the annual report.
If you are not able to respond to that, it should be fine. This will be a matter for the department. But still, if you are able to respond, it's a simple question. Were you able to get to this specific point as you were doing your own audit work?
No, Honorable Chair, on this one, I would like to call a friend from the department. I don't have the answer on top of my head. I would have to best validate the record of work. But I think the department might be in a better position to articulate that point.
Mr. Nguna?
I think the office of the DG must tell us, because they spoke about 33%, 27%, if I'm not mistaken, 22%. So what is the real performance of the department now? I know with the financials, you've said they are around 90 plus, but with the actual performance for them, where do you rate? I want also to reiterate on the issue of the DG. You indicated that the sole responsibility of this professional performance is on the DG. If the DG can be permanent, maybe most of these problems may subside. What about the senior management of the department?
With due respect, Minister, we may have to call on one of your officials in this particular case, your accounting officer and the CFO, just directly to respond on the specifics related to the performance bonus.
Until the top to the outcomes of the department. So your employees that got bonuses are certainly not your senior managers, they're not your directors. You'll find only one, if you're lucky, director or two, getting bonuses. The bonuses are really obtained by employees at the lower stratum of the department, not at the higher stratum of the department. And remember, the evaluation is done by the employer and the employee. The employer at that time is the supervisor and the employee. So the admin officer will evaluate the cleaner. And if the cleaner cleans the offices very well and cleans them superbly well, nobody gets ill, nobody gets sick, the offices are clean, and he comes to work on time and does an extremely good job to make sure that the office is clean. You can't link the cleaning of the office with whether we finished building a dam or not. So those are the type of issues that create the anomaly on bonuses paid at the lower level employees. But we are changing that. It's that's something they're not trying to change within the TPSA. Obviously it will not affect each and every other employee, but most employees are going to have to be linked to the outcomes of the performance of the department. Thank you.
Mr. Bazan?
So, Chair,
do I understand this correct? It's the longer I work and the more solitaire I play in the office, the more money I will get on a bonus. More or less what he said. If they work overtime. But it's not linked. 52 senior managers got 3.1 million in 2,093 officials, other officials, they got 28.4 million. The mere fact is, Jefferson, this is wrong. If it's not measured on the outcomes of the department, people are stealing money from the ratepayers. And the minister needs to look at that. I know he explained it's not within the department, but if we don't have money to deliver infrastructure to our people, surely we don't have money to pay bonuses for people not achieving what was set out for them to achieve. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's avoiding belaboring on the issue itself. We shall still have the department to come before us, where in such matters will be interrogated further. Mr. Mkuni. Okay, I think you were meant to respond or say something as well. Something?
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think, Honorable Nguni, your question was, what about senior management? Because we kept re-emphasizing it. At the DG level.
In the expenditure versus the performance.
Oh, in the expenditure versus the performance. Okay. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, if you look at senior management level and put that, I would assume that Honourable Nguni is looking at DDG levels. You would. I think in that same slide that we were presenting, we also presented at the DDG level the turnaround time. That you would have seen that the turnaround in the DDG levels was not too high, which implied that generally the period of vacancy on the DDG level was not high, so it was the positions were still filled. And I think your question then might evolve to say then why did the outcomes still come the way we are when that put that level of put, at that senior management level was still well populated. And that one, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, would require further understanding of what that case could be. However, for us, we always look at it in the sense that the DG provides direction and provides guidance and that direction of the department. And if that position remains, is not stable for whatever reason, then even the senior management can actually carry effective and effective activities, but which are not well coordinated to can lead or result in an outcome for the entire organization. So that is how we always look at it, and that is why we always defaulted back in saying, and we need to first stabilize the DG position. If the DG position is stable, however the results are still not coming, then you start almost in an elimination form, getting to other finer details of even going, I'll be naughty and saying, you then start saying, if we have guidance, we have direction, we have leadership, but the workforce is not really coming into play, then you start asking yourself, is it a good fit for this position? Is it well skilled and capacitated for that? But that is something that we don't do from the office point of view, because we are not qualified to assess your skill beyond looking at your qualifications and your experience, as you would have stated. But it would require the department to go into further investigations or within themselves to say if this leadership is fit for purpose, if I can put it that way. But it's something that is outside our expertise, our chair. If you look at the expenditure versus the performance, that was the one on our right, where you were. We looked at it at this particular slide that we reflected here, and I think my colleague articulated the numbers. Maybe you may want to come in again just to re-emphasize why we are sitting at 95% and 29%, when we look at, for example, program 3 and so forth. If it's something that
So what we've just alluded to is to say that Program 3, as indicated, had the budget spend of 95%, but the achievement of the program was only 29%. And you will also see that a lot of the Program 3 targets was actually reduced with the revised annual performance plan. For example, your mega project, which was then reduced from 3 to 0. And then also in Program 3, like we alluded to in that one table, is to say that there was then obviously the unauthorized, there's irregular, and there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure that is linked to Program 3. And then on Program 1, for example, you will see that the budget spend was 121%, with achievement of 75%, and that 121% alludes to war on leaks that they added to Program 1, the department, when they revised the APP.
Okay. What I would recommend we do at this juncture, having listened to the AG's office and reflecting on a whole range of areas, clearly it becomes work in progress for us, especially as we prepare ourselves for the session with the department. And clearly we are not able to delve into all the areas of concern and raising questions. Given the time that we have, according to the watch I have here, it talks to 20 minutes after 1 o'clock. Expected of us to go to lunch would have been at 1 o'clock at the latest. I would rather request that we break for lunch. We come back with the department at 2:30. And then you take it from there. Yeah, my dear is advising that lunch is served at the second floor at the restaurant. We can go. We can start moving.